Welcome to the Starting SaaS Podcast. My name is Micaela Richmond, and this podcast is all about creating a foundation for SaaS. All right, welcome to the Starting SaaS Podcast. Today, I am really, really excited because I'm joined by Stefan Sonić, and we are going to talk about SDRs, we're going to talk about sales, hiring, and all of the different projects that he is working on currently. So welcome to the podcast.
Hey, Ella, thanks so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Okay, so I wanted to dive right in. And first, my favorite question is, how did you get started in this industry?
That's a cool way of starting things. And it was a fun way of kind of getting into the tech industry. So I'm in Belgrade, Serbia. So that's in Europe. And like, it's a bit different. The tech world is a bit different here in comparison to the United States. And so I've always wanted to kind of be in this space, but I never knew how to kind of break in or even like, you know, what were the options there. And so at some point, a US startup called Shift Moving, they were having like a speed dating session here in Belgrade. And I kind of bumped into that event and kind of went there. I went through that whole US type hiring speed dating event, and I actually got an offer there. And so that was my first, you know, tech company experience that I got. I basically got hired there as a let's call it like an executive assistant. After which I spent there a while, kind of going through different roles, from, you know, being an assistant to different people and different departments, and learning about, you know, sales and sales development and product development and like partnerships and supply chains and all of that good stuff. So yeah, that's kind of how I came to be in the tech industry.
That's awesome. So I just want to clarify. So you worked for US companies, or did you work for companies that were located in Belgrade?
It is still a US company with an office in Belgrade. So I don't think they have offices here anymore, but yeah, it's a US company with offices here.
What is it like to work for a company that is not located in your country? Like, is it kind of difficult having to navigate different time zones and different types of people?
Yeah, I wouldn't say difficult. It's just different. But I've basically, you know, I was aware that that's going to happen, that I would have to kind of navigate through different time zones. And, you know, having that as an expectation from the beginning, I had never had a problem. So my starting work hours were, I think it was like from 12 p.m. to 8 p.m. And then it kind of moved around to like 2 p.m. to 10 p.m., sometimes even midnight. So it wasn't really that difficult to navigate through. What was interesting, though, it was like, you know, that's the first time that I kind of came across remote culture, because everything was over Zoom. You know, it wasn't really mandatory to go to the office, and basically, you know, you could do your job. And mind you, this was 2019, so pretty much before the COVID hit.
Okay, this makes sense. So, and you began in sales, right?
Kinda, not directly in sales. I began as an account executive as an executive assistant to he was in charge of the corporate development side of things, so strategic partnerships, like acquisitions, and stuff like that. And so I was kind of doing the analysis behind those potential projects, trying to find synergies between the company and you know, other companies that were kind of, you know, in the space. And from there, I ended up at some point, you know, doing partnerships and trying to recruit like companies that are in adjacent industries that might kind of hook up onto our supply chain and be like a referral partner to an extent. So that's kind of where I came across, you know, business development in a sense.
Oh, this is awesome. So I don't know if you know this, but I'm in partnerships. And so I'm excited by the, I'm so excited that, you mentioned this because I haven't yet had anybody on the podcast that understands partnerships so that they can explain it. This is more of a beginner podcast, right? Like how can we take these high level things such as referral partnerships and really, really explain them to people in a way that makes sense and that's not, you know, chock full of lingo, et cetera. So partnerships, how would you explain partnerships to somebody that had no idea what it was on a first, like a, you know, fifth grade level and then a higher level? Like if you were approaching somebody who's also an exec in business and you're trying to explain to them, okay, well, this is how partnerships could help you and your business.
Right. Okay, let's start from the beginning. So I like to explain partnerships in comparison to sales. So it has a bit of similarities, meaning like skill-wise, maybe some activity-wise, but it's different because when you're selling, you have a product or a service that somebody is buying, right? But when you are trying to forge a partnership, it's basically you trying to find adjacent industries or companies that might have use of your product or your audience, and that you might have use of their product or their audience. And so what we're looking for in partnerships is to find those synergies where you can either send them leads, for example, that might be cold, warm, doesn't matter. So leads are potential customers. So, you know, we can send the partners leads and they can pay us, or we can have a cross referral. So we send them referrals, they send referrals to us. There's a bunch of different models that we can have there. Also, there are upstream and downstream partnerships. For example, let's use the example of Shift. So Shift is a company that's basically they have software and services that are basically helping people move. And so I was looking for partnerships that would help me basically either get leads to, you know, bring people who are moving into our funnel, or people who are moving that are already in our funnel to provide them with additional services that might kind of, you know, we can upsell them and make money on that. And on the other hand, the partner makes money just because of getting a lead. And so that's kind of hopefully clear enough what kind of a partnerships. There's like a ton of different models. I mean, every company is different, and based on which you can, you know, create as many partnerships as there are types of companies, even more. So, yeah. On the other hand, like I'm going to try and explain in a more sophisticated manner, like a partnership is basically finding finding partners that have synergies with your own business model that can either create value in money or can create value in intangible stuff like, I don't know, like number of leads, exposure to an audience, for example, like marketing partnerships. For example, a good example of a partnership would be, you know, you have a podcast, you have like 50,000 subscribers, and, you know, you enter a partnership with a company that you're going to promote. And basically, as you promote the company, they get exposure to your 50,000 subscribers. On the other hand, you get, you know, a financial incentive or, you know, access to their, for example, tools or whatever. Like that would be an example of a partnership. Did I explain that properly?
That's amazing. Yeah, that was perfect. It's really interesting because partnerships is like, it's very, very human. It's mutual benefit. Like, how can you find mutual benefit? But it gets complicated whenever you get into the how. Like, how do you strike these partnerships? How do you go about defining what a good partnership is, or defining the different terms and finding that mutual benefit, and then not only finding it, but also creating it and making sure that you're consistent with it. You said that you worked in strategic partnerships. How did, and you also said that you were kind of doing the research behind it. So like understanding the companies, understanding the strategy behind it. How did you guys audit good strategic partnerships? Like, what are some of the different characteristics that were not require, but like that were characteristic of a good strategic partnership?
It comes down to understanding different business models. So, starting with what is our goal, right? What do I want to achieve with partnerships of any kind? Is it, additional leads that are going to lead to revenue? Is it just exposure and just like top of funnel stuff? Is it more of a, for example, I don't know, like a legal partnership, is it something that's, a partnership that's going to help me do a process better? So basically starting with that, based on that, and let's say it's our goal to get more leads, to try and close more business. That's when I would go out and just look for companies that are, basically, handling leads of the same type as I am, and just trying to find a synergy where they would have an incentive to send those leads to us. It would basically come down to a lot of research and understanding. And when I say research, it's basically understanding how the company performs, how it operates, like what is the business model behind what the company is doing, right?
Okay, because whenever you understand the business model, then you know where to look for those overlaps.
Exactly. Once you know, where the strength of a potential partner is, that's where you can approach. And also, I mean, this goes back to sales as well. Like you can use those things to personalize the proposition, right? And just show that you understand the company that you're approaching and be like, hey guys, we have this that we can offer you. You can get this in return from you. We would need this. And it's a win-win situation. So basically partnerships are, in short, a win-win strategy, ideally, right? But as you mentioned, there's a ton of things that you kind of need to comb through to make sure it works.
That's amazing. I think that's I had never thought of it in terms of the understanding business models, because then you don't have to waste your time. Like you know the points where to look. Okay, this model functions in this way. I know that if they have something to offer me, it'll be right here. And sometimes you do have to step out of that and find maybe value that you weren't expecting, but like more often than not, it is just as simple as that. And I think that that's really, really, really cool.
Yep. I would also like add, because there are similarities with sales, it's also important when you're selling to understand the business model of your customer, right? But the easier part, I think, in sales, and don't get me wrong, like sales is like not easy. What I'm saying is understanding the business model of your customer, you have like one or two or three types of customers in total, right? And those are the only business models that you need to understand. However, when you're doing partnerships, for literally every new partner, you need to understand their business model, which is presumably different than the last one. So that kind of requires a bit more, let's say, well, at least work and expertise to an extent, experience at least.
It's generalized. You have to understand business models generally, versus in sales, you can niche down and just really, really, really understand your specific type of target business model. That's really interesting. So you did that. And then we're here especially because, so you are starting your own podcast. What is it going to be called?
So the current name is SDR Hire Podcast.
Okay, which is, what are you going to talk about?
So the podcast is targeted towards newly hired SDRs, BDRs, as well as people that are trying to break in the tech industry as sales professionals, or rather SDRs. And I'm assuming your audience already knows this, but SDRs are sales development representatives or entry-level sales people in tech companies. And their job is to basically cold call and cold email and, you know, reach out to cold leads or potential clients to book meetings for their sellers. So when I say sellers, working names are account executives, sales executives, etc. But and so I'm interviewing successful newly hired SDRs, recently promoted account executives, to basically share their stories. What's it like being a top performer or not? How they broke into tech, you know, what made them successful, and just sharing the real stories in comparison to, there's a lot of podcasts and materials out there by people who used to be SDRs, but are, for example, now sales leaders and VPs and whatnot. And to be honest, they've been an SDR. They haven't been an SDR for quite a while. And so my idea was, let's just interview people who are actually doing it, and just try to kind of, you know, bring that closer to folks trying to break in or are just starting up.
That's amazing. I'm going to ask you a couple more questions about that in a little bit, but I also want you to kind of explain what you're doing with InCreator.
Yeah. Okay. Awesome. InCreator is a pet project, let's call it like that, but ideally it's going to be a SaaS product that's going to help LinkedIn creators, so people who are actively posting on LinkedIn, to be more productive. The initial idea and the product that is currently live is a free Google Chrome extension that allows you to preview your LinkedIn post before actually publishing it, because currently you don't really know what your post is going to look like and where the see more button is going to break your copy. I mean, you can guess. However, this I find a bit easier to use. And that kind of the first step, and hopefully it's going to grow into a more complex and more useful SaaS product in the following months.
Oh, I think that's really cool. So y'all want to grow it out and make it a little bit more. So, I mean, I would assume that it would be something like something analytics driven, something maybe pre-scheduling, something like just exactly. Like full. Okay, that's awesome.
Exactly. I mean, those are the basic and the most expected features that you can, you know, come across on these tools.
Okay, that's awesome. Okay, so back to the SDR stuff and the podcast. And one of the questions that I've had is, like, being an SDR, it seems most complicated whenever you're in it specifically. Like, the advice that people give is mostly the same advice. It's like, call often, do it a certain way, and you have all of these tips and tricks, but a lot of being a great SDR boils down to the fundamentals. Have you seen, you know, talking to all of these different SDRs and, you know, being in that space yourself, what are the things that are the fundamentals, the things that people don't want to do because they seem too obvious but are so necessary?
Definitely. It really boils down to just a few things. You know, the skills you can learn, like doing a cold call, you can learn, writing a cold email, you can learn all of that stuff. Like what's important is being persistent, being, you know, determined not to give up. Did I say being consistent? Like, I think consistency is probably the most important part of all of these things. And for example, speaking with so many people for my podcast, for example, a lot of them have had, you know, a lot of troubles getting that first job, because most of them have not had, you know, specific experience in the space. And for example, companies often look for SaaS experience, right? And when I say SaaS, software as a service. So somebody with a tech background, and, you know, there's a lot of things that you need to do to kind of land that job. And those skills that you either acquire or show through that process are the ones that you're going to need as an SDR. So, you know, being resilient, being determined to succeed, not giving up, you know, sending email after email, job application after job application. You know, some people have had strategies to how they're going to approach and, like, you know, we're very focused on, like, okay, I want to work with this company. I know what I'm looking for and this is how I'm going to get it. Others were like, I'm just going to blast everybody and hopefully, you know, get something. And everything works as long as you remain consistent and keep doing those things, like, repeatedly. And then when you get into the role, just being patient, like, the success is going to come. You know, like, you're going to learn how to do the cold call. You're going to learn how to write a good cold email. Like, you're either going to get training from the company, or you're going to learn by yourself, or you're going to fail and then get a new opportunity somewhere else. And then, like, it's just being, you know, continuing to do those things and just not giving up. I think that is the biggest takeaway from all the conversations that I've had, like, in a nutshell.
Mm-hmm. I think that's really, really fascinating. So it was really interesting because whenever I was a long time ago, like this was whenever I was trying to become more of a doer, you know, I was trying to be more productive, and I thought that just wasn't me. And I think that that's something that we do a lot in different work environments. It's just like, oh, that's not me, or, oh, calling a lot scares me. But you almost have to change who you are in your mind. And the way that you do that is just constant exposure. And I found that one of the most interesting things, which is why podcasts are so important to me as a person, is that I didn't have to go out and do all of these things. I could listen to people, you know, for like 3 hours a day talking about this. And that was subconsciously rewiring my brain. And I think that that's really, really important for SDRs or people that are, you know, trying to get into these different industries, is you need to immerse yourself, because it's not just a task switching. It's not just, you know, I need to learn these skills. It's, I need to become this thing. I need to, like, change.
I totally agree. And, like, the word I would use is just mindset. It's changing the mindset that you nurture, and help that's basically what helps you succeed. And, like, I feel like success as an SDR, as well as an entrepreneur, because I kind of see those two types of people very, very similar, at least with, like, personality traits. Yeah. Like, it's just about the mindset. Like, I am going to succeed. It's just a question of time versus, you know, whether I'm going to succeed. And that's kind of what happened to me. And I know a lot of people that have had similar kind of mindset shifts. I've seen it with people I've interviewed as well. So, you know, having that mindset of I'm gonna win no matter what. And I'm gonna be the best, even, like, it doesn't matter if you're gonna be, but, like, having that mindset is actually gonna get you there. And it doesn't really matter if you're the number one or number three or number five, as long as you're, you know, having that mindset of I'm winning. So yeah, I think that kind of wraps it regarding. And yeah, I mean, SDRs and entrepreneurs, I feel like they're very, very similar categories.
That's interesting that you say that, because this is just like, I'm throwing this out there. I have no idea if this is actually valid, but I want to see what you think. So in the partnership space, I was listening to somebody talk, and they were like, what if SDRs and sales becomes like an entrepreneurial partner instead of a function of a business? And I was like, oh, this is interesting, because the mind shift that would occur, I don't know. What are your thoughts on that?
I feel like the type of skills that you need as an SDR are very, very similar to what an entrepreneur needs. And when you look at it, like you need to, you know, look failure in the eye and be like, yeah, I don't care. And just keep going forward, right? You're going to hear a lot of no's. You're going to hear a lot of, you know, go away. I don't want to look at you. I don't want to hear from you. I don't want whatever, right? Like partnerships are even similar. So I have a buddy of mine. He recently stepped into a partnerships role. And so, you know, we've been kind of going back and forth, like, you know, comparing what's it like, you know, sales partnerships today. It comes down to the same thing. Like you need to persevere. You need to be resilient. You need to kind of keep figuring out new ways to connect with people, to create value, to start conversations. So, and that's like, like as an entrepreneur, you still gotta sell, you still gotta figure things out. You still gotta, like, it's, to me, it's so much the same. Obviously, like an entrepreneur needs to juggle like everything from hiring, product management, like product ownership, developers, whatever. But like a huge part of it is sales and generating leads. And from my experience, a lot of founders and you know, first-time entrepreneurs, even later ones, struggle with generating leads. And so, for example, using that kind of a mindset and thought process, I figured, okay, what can I do to generate to an extent leads, or at least attention towards my new venture, my new company, which is SDR Hire. And that's kind of how I figured a podcast might do it. So the goal with the podcast is, you know, not necessarily generate leads, but generate attention towards SDR Hire. And so some folks that, you know, find themselves, you know, find SDR Hire appealing might, you know, sign up. If not, you know, there's a ton of value generated for everybody else. So that's the idea.
Mm-hmm. I love that. This is a great segue into hiring. So hiring is a really, really interesting topic, especially right now, because people are getting laid off and then other people are trying to find jobs. And, I guess broad first, we'll dive in a second, but on a broad level, how do you get into tech? Like, how do you break through?
Okay. So I spoke a little bit about my own experience. I know other people who have done pretty much the same, just apply and find a way to be interesting enough to get hired. Once you're in, you know, it really opens up the doors and just lets you kind of move around and figure out what's good. Another way of doing things, like opposed to just applying, is doing the research and acquiring the skills needed to break into tech. And so it's not just, you know, cold calling or writing cold emails. There's a lot of things like email marketing, podcasting, even like copywriting in any sense, like, you know, writing blogs, articles, just understanding the tech landscape and what skills are in demand, and then acquiring those skills and then putting them, basically, you know, in front of hiring managers. So a good example would be, you know, you want to get into tech marketing. You go and, you know, do a couple of courses on copywriting, you write a blog about a specific topic for a specific company, and then send that via email or LinkedIn, reach out to a person in that company and be like, hey, I saw you're, you know, hiring for a copywriter. Here's something I did, you know, I'd love to get a chance to chat about, you know, getting hired, whatever. And so I think it just comes down to, again, that entrepreneurial drive, that kind of a, you know, doer, as you put it earlier, which is like, you know, let me show you. And I think sales works like that as well. Like, let me show you, you know, why this product is actually good for you, rather than talking about it, or like, here's the outcome, rather than here are the features, right? So yeah, I'd say those would be the main. Obviously, there's a ton of companies that are out there offering trainings, programs that are kind of supporting people who are trying to break into tech. And I mean, there's really a lot of companies, especially for sales as well, like SDRs. SDR Hire is to an extent one of them. But like, there's a lot of great companies offering trainings for free. Some are paid. You know, I would also advise people just taking courses and learning as much as you can. Like, you're not gonna get, you know, rich by saving a few $100s or a few $1,000s, but you are gonna get rich if you land an awesome enterprise sales role that's gonna make you, you know, $500,000 in 3 years. So that's kind of the mindset that I have regarding, or at least I used to have before kind of entering this entrepreneurship journey.
Wow. I think that is like, that is everything that I wish I had heard before, because it's so true. People that are hiring in tech, I think that this is why. Whenever you are getting hired for a SaaS position, SaaS is usually startup level. And what you do, what you bring to the table is directly impacting the company. So they want to make sure that the people that they're bringing on are capable of directly impacting the company in a way that is very, very helpful. Nobody's going to give you, here's the list of things that you need to do, and here's how you do it, and here's like the strict barriers that I want you to stay within. Like, SaaS is very free because people want to build, they want solutions, we want to create. And I think that that's why the hiring, you got this 100% spot on. I think the hiring is so novel in SaaS because it's not as simple as throwing your resume places. Like, people don't just want to know where you went to school and what skills you say that you have. They want to see you do something, because in your role at the company, they want to see you do something. They want you to add something. I wish I knew that beforehand.
I bet. I mean, that's also something that, you know, I kind of stumbled upon that because, for example, one of the jobs that I landed, I nailed the assessment part. And I, like, they hired me more or less like on the spot. And that's where, when I realized, like, you really need to show what you know. That doesn't necessarily have to be perfect. It doesn't, like, you will build upon that skill, but show something, show that you at least did the research. That's like the minimum that is literally a must. Like, if you're like, I don't know, especially if you're applying for a company that you actually want to work with, opposed to, like, you know, just a company that you applied, like, do the research, know what the company is doing, know who their target audience is, what their product is. It doesn't matter the role, like, whether sales, marketing, you know, product, just understand what the company has. Anyway, I did want to kind of piggyback off of what you said, which is, you know, showing the skill rather than saying you have something, just throwing your resume at a company, which is the kind of the basic premises of SDR Hire, in a sense. When I used to kind of interview SDRs when I was an SDR manager, you know, I kept seeing the same thing, like a ton of steps, where, like, there's no connection between the previous and the next one. For example, an SDR would have to, you know, tell the same story to three different people and then do an assessment based on which basically the person gets more, you know, hired more or less. And so I realized, like, why not just flip that and put the assessment part first and let the companies choose SDRs they feel would be the best fit based on, for example, their cold call skills and the way they write cold emails, right? And so that's kind of how the idea of SDR Hire came to be.
Interesting. Yeah, the whole hiring space is really, really interesting to me. And I mean, especially right now, like, there's an overabundance of jobs that need to be filled, but then there are overabundance of people that want to fill them. And then there's this idea of, this is how job hiring used to be, and this is how working used to be. And COVID entirely flipped that on its back with remote work and with, you know, owning your own work. Like, you have to be consciously trying to do your work and having systems, because nobody's looking over your back most of the time. And yeah, I think it's so, so interesting.
Definitely. Especially after COVID, but like hiring has always been in my mind broken. Like I've been in the market for like, mm-hmm. I don't know, like 6 years, I think. And I've never enjoyed a single hiring process because it's always, you know, it's very company focused, where, you know, you kind of need mm-hmm. to prove yourself to the company. Obviously that's fine. Like in the early days when you're just starting out and you just want to get a job, that's okay. But like, as you mm-hmm. progress, I think those things kind of need to change. Especially as you have some skills acquired, you know, it's just the playing field has changed, and there's a lot more power on the side of the employees or other candidates in comparison to like 5 years ago. And so I would just like, you know, I like to promote that thought of like, we as candidates have a lot more power towards the companies trying to hire us. And so I encourage people not to be afraid of negotiating, not to be afraid of like saying their mind, because like I've had, you know, roles where I would just keep silent and not say what I feel, and then kind of burn out and be sad and not be satisfied with where I'm working. So, yeah, I mean, we could talk about hiring and all of that like 3 days straight.
Oh, yeah. I have two more things that I want to say on this, and then we'll get into our rapid fire. So one of the interesting things that I've seen happen is our relationship with work has changed. So it's not that, you know, you're trying to get one job and stay in it and create work security. Now you're trying to scale and, you know, grow. And with that, you're open to finding new opportunities every couple of years, and companies know that. And so the way that they're hiring is different. The way that people need to kind of approach their work needs to be, in my opinion, skill-based. Like, what skills am I learning at this role, and how can I learn more skills while adding value to my company? Just kind of like selfish, but also it's kind of like a partnership. It's mutually beneficial. So you're not owned by your company, but you're a partner with your company. I think that's really, really cool.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And this actually reminded me of another topic that I'm passionate about, which is owning the person, or rather their LinkedIn profile. Like, I feel like your LinkedIn profile is your own brand. You are your LinkedIn profile, not your company's. And so obviously, if you want to, you know, brand yourself as an employee of a company, that's awesome. Companies should actually provide you with marketing collateral that can help you do that. You know, posts that you can reshare or write about and use it to kind of repost, whatever. But like, it's still you. Like, the company doesn't own it. They shouldn't, you know, ask you, or rather demand of you, to, you know, have to post something or post something, you know, against your wishes in any way. So just a subject that I'm passionate about. Like, I love telling people, and like, you know, that's you. Like, somebody, like, tomorrow that company is gonna fire you, or you're gonna leave for any reason, and like, you know, your brand is gonna stay there. Like, mm-hmm. you know, nurture that brand rather than your company's brand, or rather focus more on yours.
I love that. And then, so the last thing that I want to say before we get into our rapid fire is just a resource. So this was a resource my dad told me about a long, long time ago, and he used to get one of his great roles, just like 10 years ago or whatever, but it still holds true. It's Ramit Sethi's briefcase method. I don't know if you've ever heard of it, but I'll link it below. And it's basically like, he has this framework in his mind of the things that you need to go into an interview with. And he's like, you need to research the company. You need to, I forget all of the different details, but he's basically like, you need to research the company so deeply that you can point out a problem that they have that they may not know about, and offer your solutions for it. So you already come into this interview thinking about problems and thinking about solutions. And you present that in a way that is very, very helpful, something that's very actionable. And you make yourself somebody that they want to say, okay, yeah, no, come in, please do this for us. So I thought that was a really, really cool method.
I love it. I love it. That's really awesome. Like, you make yourself a resource they would be dumb to kind of go over and just pass on. Awesome.
Exactly. Okay, let's get into our rapid fire questions. So these are just kind of like, they're not like super rapid fire. I usually ask a couple of questions afterwards, but they're the same questions that I ask everybody at the end, just to kind of get a gauge on what people in the SaaS industry are thinking and feeling, and, you know, kind of throughout different role types, what things overlap. So the first question, what is the biggest challenge you faced in SaaS?
I think, like, it was at least in my experience, and perhaps it's because I'm coming from Belgrade, Serbia, which is obviously not the US, just navigating through different currents in the companies, understanding, you know, how these companies differ in comparison to a more traditional type of company. Like, startups are different, very different than a traditional enterprise that you might find. So kind of navigating through those, understanding, you know, where, like, what parts of the company are important, which parts are not, in a sense, and how to navigate through those lines to kind of learn and acquire knowledge in a sense. So, yeah, I don't know how I would frame it better, but that's, I mean, everything else you can learn. Like, skills are just things you learn along the way, and like, either fail and then learn, or learn and then just be good at it.
Mm-hmm. I love that. Okay. Number two, what do you wish you knew whenever you started?
Oh, I wish I knew how marketing is cooler in my mind today than sales. And this is something I wouldn't have said a couple of years back, but I feel like marketing is, and I'm not saying like design and like just, you know, fluffy stuff. No, I mean, like, strategic marketing is a lot more fun to me today than sales is. So I wish I knew that earlier.
Mm-hmm. I think marketing is also really interesting because it's packaging value. Like, value exists all around us. So then understanding how to frame it and package it is just like, what better skill?
Exactly. I mean, there's this eternal beef between sales and marketing. I see it. I see those two, I don't know, like, departments. I mean, those are like literally the same thing. It's just, you know, different part of the sales funnel. Like, marketing is usually more top of the funnel and sometimes more strategic. And then sales is more like, let's call it operative, and more like downstream and lower in the funnel. But, you know, marketing can also cover bottom of the funnel. Sales can also cover top of the funnel. It's just, I think those are literally the same thing. Just, I don't know, like, I don't know why we constantly have grudges with each other. I don't get it.
Yeah, it's interesting. That's definitely something that I have been thinking about a lot. Just the way that we've in the past and traditionally siloed marketing and sales and all of these different things. I don't know what it'll look like in the future, but I don't think it'll stay the same because there's so many people like yourself that don't like it how it is.
Yeah. And I love the way you said it. I don't like the way it is. And like, I wish somebody had just showed me that it's literally the same thing, and we shouldn't see it in any, you know, any way differently.
I like that. I think I'm definitely going to take that into my future interviews as well, because I have not been as if, you know, sales and marketing were the same thing, or trying to find those similarities. And I think that you're right. Like, there are so many overlaps, and I recognize overlaps, but I think I need to do more of like almost investigative work to like find those overlaps, find what is constant between them, what is different, why do we have these two separate things. Thank you very much. That was a great light bulb moment for me. Okay. And then my last question is, what is your favorite aspect of the SaaS industry?
The learning curve. Like, obviously, the money potential, but that kind of goes without saying in my mind. But like the learning curve, the amount of knowledge that you can amass in a basically short amount of time, either as a as an employee or, for example, early stage SaaS startup, any startup, but like a SaaS in particular, since we're speaking about it, or just starting your own thing, like even on the side, even as a side hustle, the amount of new skills that you acquire, like I've acquired more skills in the past 6 months than I have throughout my whole career, literally.
That's crazy.
Yeah, it's really crazy and awesome in the same time. At the same time, so yeah, that will be it.
All right. Well, thank you for coming on the podcast. Are there any, before I ask for your where people can find you, your socials, all of that? Are there any resources that you would recommend?
Yeah, just like people often ask me, which books do I read? Like, I'm a podcast lover. I love consuming content on LinkedIn, for example, especially sales content. That's how I learned. So go and follow a bunch of people on LinkedIn, because a bunch of people on LinkedIn is sharing everything they know in order to grow their LinkedIn profiles. And so what you can get is free knowledge that you would otherwise have to pay for, free, amazing knowledge, especially for sales, that you can find every day on LinkedIn. That's one thing. And the other is podcasts. Just find something that you like, go on Spotify, go on YouTube for that matter, and just check out things that you might like. And just start learning there. That was my way into sales as well as SaaS, or rather entrepreneurship.
That's amazing. Thank you so much. Is there any place, so obviously your podcast, but where should people find you if they want to find you?
Yeah, I'm very active on LinkedIn. So Stefan Conic, Conic, anyway, I guess it's going to be linked. So my LinkedIn, my podcast isn't live yet. So, soon enough, it's going to be the YouTube channel, and yeah, that's more or less it, I'd say.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. This has been a really, really fruitful conversation, and I hope that people get a lot from it. I think that they will.
I hope so too. It's, I'll be honest, this was my first podcast that I've been a guest on. So, it's a great experience for me as well. Ella, you are an amazing host, and I enjoyed having this conversation so much. Thank you.